this is Career Camp Radio. Career Camp is a free hybrid conference and unconference dedicated to helping you build the career you deserve. Each event includes scheduled speakers, ad hoc presentations, and breakout sessions on all aspects of building your career. Career Camp's for anyone who wants to build or improve their career. For more information, visit CareerCampInternational.com. This session is Social Media and Your Career, a discussion with Douglas E. Welch from Career Camp LA 2, held March 18, 2011.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. My name is Douglas E. Welch. I feel like I always feel like a teacher when I'm in a classroom. Like, this is a little weird for me. I do a lot of education, but I don't do it in a classroom setting, so this is kind of a new thing for me. If you want to contact me, douglas@welchwright.com is my direct address. We're here to talk real quick this morning. We're going to take a little half hour, kind of 25-minute session this morning on social media and your career. So first of all, how many people out there are engaged in social media, like Facebook and Twitter? That's what I figured. Social media has become a really big part of our lives, and in some ways, I think it is one of the most important tools you can use to improve your career. What type of stuff do you guys use social media for? Socializing, that's fine. That's a good thing.
Networking.
Well, through the years, I use social media to meet with feminist organizations and talk about different topics.
Great. So communications.
Job
search directly.
I was going to say, I use it to connect people on LinkedIn, so like see job openings that are connected to network.
All of those are valid uses. Now, I'm sure that you've heard some of the social media horror stories out there. And yes, they do occur. People don't use tools in the way they're designed, sometimes the way they should be used sometimes. We see people climb to the top of a stepladder and fall off on YouTube. And people can do the same thing on social media. What I do want to do a little bit is underplay that. Yes, I think we all know, we are all of a certain level of intelligence and maturity in our lives that we know that probably putting certain stuff on our Facebook profile might not be the best thing for us, right? So we can all pretty much agree on that. Is that right? Okay. Once you get beyond that, one of the things that I really push with social media is a way of telling people what you do and how well you do it. Okay? Well, if you think about that phrase, that directly relates to your career. Because nowadays we're seeing the kind of breakdown of the typical job boards, job fairs. They're just not being as useful to people to find jobs as they were in the past. There's several reasons for that. In the case of the online job boards, you're simply buried amongst tens of thousands, if not millions, of other possible candidates out there. When someone posts something on Monster.com, they're not getting 10 resumes, they're not getting 100 resumes, they're getting 1,000 or 5,000 resumes for that given position. And it's very hard to raise yourself above that in what's in the writing world is called the slush pile. You know, writers who send in their materials to try to get it published, it goes into what the publishers call a slush pile. And that's pretty much how they treat it. It's kind of, oh, you know, I might flip through it. But in reality, it's probably all going to be scooped off and dumped in the trash at some point during their day. And I don't like to see that happen to people. So part of social media is sharing. Sharing what we do, all towards the goal of showing people what we do and how well we do it. And that can be a wide variety of things. Some people talked about socializing. Often what we're doing in our social lives actually relates to who we are as a person. Now you may have heard that some employers out there are checking your Facebook profiles when you apply for a job. Yeah, and if they weren't, they'd be silly. Because for me, being able to get to look at your social media profiles, look at what you're posting on Twitter or Facebook, gives me a more rounded idea of who you are as a person. Now, frankly, if I was hiring someone, I would feel much more comfortable making someone an offer if I had some idea of what they did in the rest of their lives. We are not simply our jobs. We're not simply what we do between 9 and 5. We have a lot of other interests in our life. You follow me on Twitter, you'll find that I'm a geek, first of all, so I geek out on all things. I geek out on technology, I geek out on coffee, I'm just an inveterate coffee lover, I like wine. I recently got involved in the Society for Creative Anachronism because my son liked archery and combat, and so we started doing that with him. But you'll find out a lot about me that doesn't have any direct bearing on what I do in my hour-to-hour, day-to-day job. The same can be said about you. Share those things via social media that are most interesting to you, because they are what make you up. They are who you are. Too often, we can kind of try to live behind our resume. No, this is my professional side, and this is my personal side, and never the twain shall meet. That's really breaking down. And in fact, it breaks down on the first day on your job when you get hired for a job. You know, you walk in and suddenly people now are confronted with who you are as a person, not just who you are, who you were in an interview. And sometimes that can be rather jarring, which is, again, why sharing what you do, I think, can help alleviate that a little bit, because people already know a little bit more about you. They'll know that you like this or that or do this or that. And you might find other people in the workplace who also have similar interests that you suddenly have a connection with. So you don't feel like you're, I've done that first day on the job thing. And, you know, it's like the first day of school, first day of college. You walk in and it's real intimidating because you don't feel you have any connection with anyone yet. Where using social media, you can actually develop that. So I'd highly encourage you to share as much as you can. Some people say, oh, you know, people follow me on Facebook, that they get kind of a torrent of stuff for me because I tend to post a lot of what I do. I just Twittered out, you know, here I am talking about social media and careers at Career Camp. And if they don't have a lot of other friends on Facebook yet, I can kind of overpopulate their stream. That said, as they gather more friends, it'll start to balance out and we'll start to get, you know, more of a mix of messages from various people. At that point, I'd like to ask you, are there any questions you guys have about using social media? And I kind of broadly say social media because even YouTube has social media aspects to it. You have the typical Facebooks and Twitter and MySpace and stuff like that. But do you have any questions? Yes?
I'm kind of torn on the whole, like, when I get someone who posts that much, I get kind of turned off. You know, so where is the line between keeping your presence known and just being overproductive and just being obnoxious?
It's a great thing. First of all, think about social media self-preservation. If people say, Doug, you post too much, I say, you know what? You can hide me. You don't have to unfriend me, but you can just hide me for a while. And as you get more friends, then you can turn me back on and I'll mix up with your group. That's your decision. People sometimes forget that you have the decision of what comes into your life via social media, and you can decide, well, you know, that person isn't talking about something that has great value to me. And that's how I break it down, too. The people you follow on social media, people you friend on Facebook, the people you follow on Twitter, and stuff like that, every time you're presented with a decision, should I follow this person or should I not, you need to look at what they're posting and say, does this have value to me? The fact doesn't mean it doesn't have value. It just means it doesn't have value to you. I can have friends who are just totally into knitting and love knitting and write some great stuff about knitting, but if I'm not interested in knitting, it doesn't have value to me. And so I might say, well, I'm probably not going to follow that person because it has value, but not to me. And that's the decision that you and all of you have to make, is don't be a promiscuous friender, okay? Make a decision. Look at their last page. Look at their wall on Facebook. Look at their last page of tweets on Twitter. Look at their last set of messages on LinkedIn and say, is what they're talking about valuable to me? And again, it's not a value judgment of the person. Sometimes you get a little guilty, you know, when you reach for that ignore button on Facebook. I think people think that when they hit the ignore button, a big red sign flashes up on their friend's computer and says, such and such isn't following you because you're a loser. They don't get anything like that. They don't get it. If you ignore the friend request, they just don't see your stuff. Okay? It's okay. And if they ask you about it, and some people can get a little bent out of shape about it. I try to counsel them and say, you know, it's not worth getting bent out of shape about. But say, it's fine what you're putting up. It just doesn't have value for me. Because there is a certain self-preservation aspect. You can only take in so much noise before it all becomes noise. And so that's what you do, is if you have someone like that, maybe you don't follow that person. Maybe you, for example, on Facebook, people always invite you to the games. You know, I just ignore. I don't engage in any of the gaming on Facebook because it's noisy to me. And I can just hide that one app on Facebook. I can say, don't show me anybody's Farmville stuff anymore. I'm still following the person. If they post something else, I still see that. But I don't see those particular applications. Yes, I'll be right back.
Following on that, I mean, I get what I can do kind of to minimize what I'm taking in, but in terms of how you feel, are you saying like it's better to be more productive and then have them choose not to follow you than to kind of take that in and limit more posts?
Yes, I think it is in your best interest to share as much as you feel comfortable sharing valuably. You know, what I had for lunch, not that valuable. Hey, where I had lunch is this really cool place that nobody knows about. Valuable. So in your own self-censoring type of way, you might think, you know, what am I sending out there in the stream? You'll see in my Twitter stream that there's these messages that come saying, I like this. And it's basically a link to something that I found interesting that in Google Reader, and I just happen to hit share, and it goes out. It's not, I didn't have time to write a whole blog post about it or something like that, but it is something that's interesting. I was worried that those were going to become noisy and people wouldn't like that. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to try it for a while, and if I get complaints about it, I won't do it anymore. It ended up being one of the most commented, one of the most retweeted, one of the most forwarded items that I have in my entire Twitter feed, are these quick shared items. Because they're neat, they're cool. I'm reading so much stuff on the web every day that I come across these things that, you know, are useful to people. And so in that case, I hope it has value to people. And it seems to. I tend to keep a fairly stable set of Twitter followers as far as numbers go. That's how you can tell, too. If your Twitter followers are going up, you're doing okay. If it's staying steady, you're doing okay. If it goes down, then you need to think, maybe I'm being a little too noisy. So there are ways of gauging that. The reason you want to share as much as you can is that you have no idea who your audience is. Nielsen likes to tell us on television, we know exactly who the audience for this show is. It's 8 men, 18 to 35, with this much income. And so it's like, that's fictional, okay? The fact is, they don't know who their audience is either. Your job is to get out there what you do and how well you do it to as many people as possible, to allow people to stumble upon you. And I can finally say, I now have a personal demonstration of this. I'm a computer consultant by trade, moving into new media consulting over the years. I do a lot of other things. One of the things I do is a gardening blog, because I bought a house that had a 10-year-old garden, and I come from a small farm town in Ohio originally, so I got back into gardening. So I started writing about it and sharing about it. And over the last couple of years, a manufacturer of a garden equipment named Troy-Bilt, there back in Ohio where I'm from, wrote me and said, hey, we want to send you some equipment. Look in our catalog, pick what you want, we'll send it to you. Just if you like it, review it. If you don't like it, review it. We really don't care. We just want you to write about this stuff. I said, okay, so over the last couple of years we've done that. Well, just this week I signed a contract with Troy-Bilt. They're actually doing a thing called the Saturday Six. And as they've gone out and found six garden bloggers across the country. And we're going to become spokesmen for them. We're going to blog about their products. We're going to actually do a personal appearance at a Lowe's store and stuff like that. And it's a paid gig. So I was doing barter before. The fact is, though, I didn't consciously go out and say, I'm going to go to Troy-Bilt and say, you need to hire me. I simply put my stuff out there. I did what I was always going to do. I wrote about my garden. I developed an audience. I found my audience, or more importantly, my audience found me. But if I had never put the stuff out there, the chances of anyone finding me would have been zero. So let the audience find you. There was a question, and that'll be right to you. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. If I'm working with like a younger population who's posting everything right on Facebook, what are the guidelines that I want to talk to them about so that they're ensuring their best, you know, that their best is up there? Because if you're saying employers are going to be looking at their Facebook, right, before hiring them, what are the guidelines that I want to do?
You know, there's the old adage, don't put anything out there you wouldn't want your mama to see. That's still a pretty good one. The point there is get them to talk about their accomplishments. Rather than about the minutiae of their day, find accomplishments that they can talk about. If they write a, you know, exceptionally good paper on something, that's worth putting out there. And because there's going to be other people interested in that topic. In that case, there might be other people of that age group interested in that topic. So definitely I would say look for accomplishments rather than simply the minutiae of life. Also, and I'm sure you're already telling this, but I'll reiterate it here, don't put anything on the internet that you don't want to be publicly seen. Okay? When I started doing social media, that's the attitude I took into it. I assume that anything I put out there is fully public. Anybody, you can tell me, oh no, I've got my privacy settings on Facebook, so only my friends can see. Nah, there's too many holes. If you can figure out the privacy settings of Facebook, more power to you, because I've been a computer consultant for 25 years and I can't figure them out, okay? You're hearing a lot of slapback about that right now because people signed up for Facebook, and at the beginning, Facebook did supposedly have these, you know, privacy walls and only your friends. But have you seen they've been breaking those walls down and releasing more and more information? And so just go into it the attitude that anything you put out there is public and it's there forever. Okay? And I do mean until the sun burns out and the servers melt in their closets, it's there forever. The internet has an extremely long memory. I have a question here that I'll be right to you. Yes? I am very fond of saying that everybody has some aspect of social media they can use. It can be a plumber, an accountant, a hairdresser, an actor, an actress, a musician. There are benefits to be had for everyone of engaging in social media. And it all comes down to thinking, I know it's LA, if we're not working in the entertainment business, we don't think, oh, I have an audience. We do. Each and every one of us has an audience that wants to find us, that wants to find out what we're doing, what cool and neat things we're doing. And so the fact is, anything, anybody, any job, you can be an accountant who's figured out, hey, I just figured out that by using these tax laws, I can save my company $30,000 a year. Well, there's other companies that want to know, there's other accountants who want to know that stuff. You know, it may sound like a ludicrous example, but it really is true. You'll find accountant forums out there on the internet where accountants get together and talk about accounting. It's okay. That's what turns you on. Share it with other people. There are other people out there interested in it. One of the things I'm very fond of saying is everyone is an expert in something. Because I consider an expert someone who has one more experience or one more piece of knowledge than somebody else. And we all do. There's some part of our lives where we have an experience that someone else could benefit from hearing about. Or we have one more piece of knowledge that someone else could benefit from knowing. So consider yourself that you are an expert in something, and that's another great thing to share. Anything that you think you're an expert in, and I encourage you all to think you're all an expert in something. I don't care your age, your business, whatever. You know something that someone else wants to know. Those are the things that are really important to share out there. Yes, question.
Well, yeah, mostly I wanted to say about privacy. Mostly there's like no so-called privacy in any social media network because mostly the rules say mostly you read little by little that your information isn't private. If they think that you're doing something wrong, they may post it for security setting. If another company wants to get information from you to see if you're a good person for the position, then they may sell your information. Mostly all of your information, all of your pictures, everything that you write becomes part of the social media network. There's no privacy. And another way there's no privacy is because of the Patriot Act. The government can also get all of your information, and also other governments are doing similar types of acts or for getting that type of information. So
even more simple than that, you can have a friend who can see something. Well, all of a sudden, they copy and paste it somewhere else. It's so easy to do. And they can do it by accident. You've heard, you know, stories about people replying all to an email message or forwarding an email message when it shouldn't have been forwarded. You know, it happens. So consider, you know, that's my general rule. Everything you put out there is public. If you don't want it to be public, don't put it on the internet, okay? I can't reinforce it enough. Yes? And that is a great thing to do, too, is every so often, it's not vanity, well, maybe a little bit, do a search on yourself. Do a search on your name and on various permutations of your name. Obviously, the more unique your name, the more defined that search is going to become. But it helps sometimes to see what's being collected about you. Etsy, the crafting sales site, just had a big breach. They actually released the purchase history of about 15,000 of their members. People probably didn't want to know they were buying tea cozies or, you know, other things on their Etsy account, but guess what? It got exposed. So again, be aware of that. Do a little due diligence on your on yourself, and you'll also find that there's someone similarly named who maybe doesn't have the same ethics or that you do, and it can be useful to know that that person's out there, so that if anyone ever comes and say, well, I looked you up on the internet and there's all this nasty, no, that's not me, that's this person. That person lives in Toledo, I live here in LA. You know, you can be a little heads up on that. It's also, I mean, I find it interesting. I'll search on my name and I find that there's actually a famous astronomer who's similarly named, different middle name, but same, you know, Douglas Welch. And I once was mistaken for him when I sent a comment into an astronomy podcast. It's like, oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm not that Douglas Welch. It sometimes helps to know what's going on out there. Any other questions? Yeah, yes. Yeah, typically nowadays they will ask you for an email address. They'll have some identifier for you so they can get back to you that way. The fact is, in any job search, and this goes back to 25 years ago when I moved to LA, one of the things that struck me about it was the silence you hear, the crickets you hear when you send out resumes. I mean, that was really a shock for me because I hadn't been in the work world that long when I moved out here. But in Cleveland, I could send out resumes and I'd get, oh, yes, thank you, got it. You know, and out here, it's like, you know, crickets. and that's just the way it is, unfortunately. I actually got my job at Walt Disney Imagineering 6 to 8 months after I submitted my resume. I had actually taken another kind of temporary job because I was between jobs at the time. And well, I guess they're not going to call. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, you know, they did. The other situation you're running into is, for me, paper resumes are, if not completely dead, on their way to dying. the main reason being now when you submit an application for a job online, you're putting all your information into their system. You're basically doing the data entry for them. There's some benefits to that. One, it's in there in probably a better fashion than them trying to scan a resume into a system like that. And it does stay in their system. And, you know, before in the days of paper resumes, they say, well, we'll keep your resume on the file and we'll call you, but it's okay. Those resumes went into a trash can somewhere. Nowadays, the system actually does retain your information, and it might spit out your name at some point. And so it is a good idea to enter that directly in. I just used LinkedIn as my resume for the first time about 3 or 4 months ago. I was up for a speaking engagement, actually, and someone asked me, what's your resume? I said, you know what? The one that's got all my speaking engagements on it is my LinkedIn resume. That is the most clear picture of what I've been doing over the last, because I do so many divergent things, career camp being one of them. And so I actually revert them to my LinkedIn profile page and say, that's the most current thing. That's the most up-to-date thing for me. So typically when you submit, though, yeah, there'll be some identifier for you. There'll be probably your email address. Email addresses are becoming the new phone numbers, if you will, which is also kind of why you want to try and keep a hold of your email address. You don't want to change it too often so that you don't have, their system doesn't have an old address that might not get back to you if they do find you something. But there will be a way for them to get in contact with you, but yeah, they, especially online, as I mentioned at the beginning, something on monster.com, they're getting tens of thousands of applications and they don't want all those people calling them because it's simply, they have no way to deal with it. Yes?
No, I actually didn't have a question. I was just some of the research I've been doing on this is saying, you know, in terms of, like, if say someone already has a Facebook thing up and they've already posted things that they can't take back, some of the suggestions I was reading was you can put a different email on your resume, set up a totally different email for your resume that's separate from your Facebook one, and or change your name slightly on Facebook so it's not so easy to find, so that you can keep it social if you want it social.
actually had the question the other day of, do you have a personal Facebook and a professional Facebook and stuff like that? And the way I explain it, I thought about doing that in the past, and you know what? I've never been able to do it. I am who I am, and I do so much different stuff that it's really not possible. And I don't think it's necessarily possible for anyone to have kind of a bifurcated personality. Things bleed over from one to the other, and I think it's just the natural thing that occurs. One of the things, this sort of goes back to your question too, there's a way you can sort of track things too as far as where something came from. How many people have a Google email address, a Gmail address? The trick with Gmail, if you don't know about it, it's actually very useful. I use it to see who's selling my name, my email address. With a Google address, for example, my Google address is Douglas.Welch. Yeah. Forgive my scrawl here. .com, right? Not a lot of people know this, but there's a thing called plus addressing. I can say Douglas.Welch plus monster. Okay? @gmail.com. That's a valid email address. And I can submit that. Gmail ignores the part after the plus. If someone replies to that email address, it says, oh, it's going back to Douglas. But it remembers this part of it. And so I can say, if someone replies to me for something, and I see that it came from @monster, @plusmonster, I don't know, that came directly because I submitted something to Monster. Or I posted something on Yahoo. And you can use that to kind of tag your emails so that when you submit to someplace, you can actually say, well, who's this replying? Because it could be months later. It's like, who's this replying to me? This came because I submitted that to this. Yes?
So you're saying, right, Douglas got, plus monster at Gmail.
Yeah.
Okay. You read it where?
Basically, string this all out as one line. So Douglas.Welch plus monster @gmail.com.
Cool.
And this word can be anything. I mean, keep it fairly normal. Don't put special characters in there and stuff. But you can put any label you want in there. So when I sign up for a new service, let's say PATH. PATH is a new service, a new photo sharing service. I can sign up with email address Douglas.Welch plus PATH @gmail.com. And then in 3 months, I can get a spam email from someone that uses that address, and I have the PATH sold my email. just some spammer, basically, out there. But it's also, you can use it to track all these online travels that you might be making. Does that make sense?
Are they the only people that do that?
The only one I know of.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to look up to see if they're going to be able to. I know them. I know they do it for sure. Yes?
So you can put multiple?
No, you just want one plus. Yeah, basically, you want to keep it kind of a plus and a word. You can put whatever you want here and create as many.
In other words, your masterpiece essay, you want to know if it's responsive to someone.
Yeah.
And then you might submit something, your favorite recipe, and you would do a different.
You can have any number of these. For each one, though, you can only keep it to like one word.
Right.
Sometimes you can run words together, too, there. You can create as many different ones of these as you want.
One might be your favorite recipe, and the other would be your
magic. And you can filter on these in your Gmail. You can say, if something gets replied to that, you can have it show up in a different way, turn red, label it a certain way. So you can really use it to manage your incoming mail. Another question? Yes? You may have heard of a term called SEO. It stands for Search Engine Optimization.
Mm-hmm.
There are companies out there that engage in search engine optimization, basically trying to get your website to the top of their search returns. You know, the fact is, it's somewhat snake oil, okay? Because while they may be able to get your website at the top of the list for today, tomorrow might not be. There is a way to apply those types of ideas, though, to your resume and to other stuff you put out there. And the way to do that is simply use the words that relate most to what you're talking about. I post stuff on my website, for my career column. It contains a word, career, jobs, work, employment, just by the natural fact that those are the words you use to describe what you're doing. And so the same thing applies to you. Use those words. If you're a ceramicist, a potter, you know, you're going to talk about clay and glaze. And so the words are actually there. You can put a little thought towards it to make sure you're, you know, you may want to go back and look over and say, did I really describe this as best I can? And you might see, oh, I didn't use the word blah. I didn't use the word purchasing. I didn't use the word development or whatever. And you can kind of go back and put those things in. They should really be growing out of what you're discussing anyway. Because if you're talking about a ceramicist, they're going to talk about clay and glaze and wheels and just by the nature of what they're talking about. So I guess the best I can say is be the most descriptive you can about whatever you're doing. Because those are the terms that are going to pop up. Yes, sir?
So for using your, you said you use your LinkedIn as your resume. For those of us who are, say, going through a career change or open to a career change, and we're tailoring a resume, essentially for each, I mean, possibly even each job you're applying for, what do you recommend for, I mean, do you post multiple resumes on LinkedIn?
Yeah.
Do you just list everything on LinkedIn and they can go back and if we're going to do that search and they'll find out?
That comes down to the sort of that split personality
right.
decision. I err on the side of including everything.
On LinkedIn.
On LinkedIn.
Right.
Because it is a sum total of what I do. And oftentimes, and you may find this too, things do interrelate.
Right.
Even if you're kind of redirecting your career to a different method, there is experience you might have in it, not something else that might say, for example, I talk about people who are trying to transition. Like, I say, think about hybrid jobs. Think about, oh, okay, you're paralegal, but you're really not that cool on being a paralegal anymore, but you have legal experience. Well, you could work in IT at a law firm. You could work in something else at a law firm. If you're a musician, you can work in some other position at a music company. And in that case, you're more valuable because you actually have knowledge from both sides of the hallway. And so you can bring that with you. And I don't think we should discount knowledge you've gotten on other jobs that might be transferable. That's the nice thing about LinkedIn, though, is it doesn't. You're not stuck with the one-page resume anymore, which is that was always tough. Even early on, that was tough for me to cram because I believe in your resume, you should be telling a story, and so it was often a narrative resume rather than just line listings and stuff. And so it was hard to get it on one page. I think LinkedIn actually provides a better atmosphere for that because you can go a little more in depth on what you've done and your accomplishments and what you learned and any special knowledge that came out of that job. So that one, unfortunately, can be a very personal decision, a subjective decision you have to make. I tend to err on the side of just putting it out there because, like the Troy Built thing, someone's going to find it. You know, it's like, oh, well, that's, you know, someone comes to you with an opportunity, it's like, okay. You know, and that is, going back to the audience metaphor, you want to give people any reason to stumble upon what you do. And you may find that they'll stumble upon something that, you know, you do more as a hobby than as a career, but maybe you can turn the hobby into a career. You know, maybe you've got enough experience there, you might enjoy that. You might not. Unfortunately, turning a hobby into a job is often one of the ways to kill a hobby because you decide, oh, I don't like doing this as a job. But in other cases, it does work out. Someone who's into to raising plants and horticulture and stuff like that might actually love to be, you know, a horticulturist at the Theodore Payne Foundation Native Plant Society. You know, it's not something that maybe they even thought about. Mm-hmm. But let those opportunities come to you and do anything you can to make those opportunities come to you. Yes?
Do you have any recourse? Like, if you do find something of yours posted online to, say, like Google Photos or something like that, do you have any recourse to get it removed?
Not much, no. No, the internet has an extremely long memory. No, unfortunately, there's not a lot you can do. It'll eventually kind of age and roll off, but yeah, it's why we do. You want to put that thought into it. Actually, I saw a great poster the other day. It says, "Google before you tweet is the new think before you speak." Okay, that's a poster. I saw that, and it's very true. Think about what you're saying. You have to. Within some guidelines, share what you do, but do provide a little thought. Don't drunk tweet. Don't drunk Facebook. Okay, it serves nobody well, and you're only gonna regret it in the morning. Yes.
Isn't there a way to unfollow yourself on photos?
You can on Facebook. See, Facebook's a more closed system. So yeah, you can actually untag yourself from a post or untag yourself from a photo. But in the general internet, no. And once Google's kind of slurped it up, it's kind of there. Yes, question?
On the note of like the keywords for resumes, I heard a lot of companies have a program that when you send it in, if you don't hit certain keywords, it just discards the resume.
Hopefully the keywords they're using, though, for example, if you're going for a job in purchasing, you know, they're going to include invoicing, procurement. Those words should be part of your description of what you do anyway, if that's the type of job you're looking for. So, again, describing what you do in as clear a fashion as possible will help you in that regard. I mean, I don't think we're back to the old days of listing, you know, every program you've ever used and stuff like that. I don't think it's going to help you very much because the fact is, the more everyone does that, the less useful it will be for them. Companies want a magic bullet of some sort, but the fact is there isn't one. They still have to go through stuff. You know, that might be the call, you know, the initial call. But I think if you describe what the work you do in the best way possible, you're going to be better off than someone who's just saying, yeah, I worked in purchasing and I did this and, well, you know, whatever. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't think you're trying to guess which keywords they're looking for. You'll go mad. You know, you'll literally go mad second-guessing yourself. So just describe what you do in the best way possible. Any other questions? I think we're about out of time. Please go ahead and look at the schedule board outside and pick your next session.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a great day.
This is Career Camp Radio. Career Camp is a free hybrid conference and unconference dedicated to helping you build the career you deserve. Each event includes scheduled speakers, ad hoc presentations, and breakout sessions on all aspects of building your career. Career Camp's for anyone who wants to build or improve their career. For more information, visit CareerCampInternational.com.